Okay, welcome everybody to the Lift Heavy Run Long Members Only Podcast. This is episode one, and we have a treat for you. We have Mr. Andrew Clayton. I'm going to give you a little bit of his resume here shortly, but it's pretty unbelievable. It's not every day that you get to wake up and talk to one of the strongest men in the world, but that is the position I'm in today. So I am fortunate and excited to be talking to Andrew. I am your host, Wilson Horrell. Some of you know me as Beefcake. I want to thank you for supporting Lift Heavy Run Long and becoming a member. I realize that money is not growing on trees, but I love LHRL and I love being able to connect with folks and put out content. However, maintaining a website, managing a blog, hosting an app, and producing a podcast can become a very expensive hobby. So I appreciate your support and allowing us to continue to do what we do and connect with people like you. The members only area of LHRL is for you, and I want your input, and I want you to enjoy what you see and what's happening at Lift Heavy Run Long. So if there's anyone that you'd like for me to try to get on the show or anything that you want to see happen, feel free to reach out to me at the address wilson@liftheavyrunlong.com. And if nothing else, I am persistent. So if you want me to try to get a hold of somebody, I will do my best to get a hold of somebody and reach out. I want to let you know that the Members Only podcast is uncensored. I want you to be aware that if you have children in the room or in your vehicle, that there may be some inappropriate language. I do my best to censor the LHRL podcast that is available to the public, as I have children myself and I like to listen to podcasts with them in the car. So I want to respect you and your family. However, the Members Only podcast is a little bit different. It's probably going to be a little bit more raw. So with that, I'm going to let you know what happened to me this morning when I woke up. I got a text message from my friend who lives on the other side of the world, Max Kenny Herbert. Max KH, he is a fellow big boy runner who lifts a lot of weight and runs long distance, and he has the goal of being in the 5400 club, 50 mile, 400 deadlift club, and he'll be doing that real shortly. He sent me a message that said, "Dude, did you know that we have the world's strongest man under 105 kilograms in the LHRL Facebook group?" And it turns out that we have a mutual friend in Kale Beck of Starting Strongman, who has the podcast Strong Talk Podcast. And so I got to looking around on Andrew Clayton's Facebook page and kind of stalking him in a very uncomfortable way. And he was kind enough to tell me that he would be willing to speak with me today. So we're making this happen, and I am pumped up to have Andrew on the phone with me. How you doing, Andrew?
Well, I'm pretty stoked. It's easier just to get it done and out of the way. I've been offered to be on podcasts, and if you don't hop on it, then it kind of hurts both groups. You know, either you don't want to do it anymore, or you got somebody else, or I don't have the time. So I have the time today, and I do like the group. I haven't been in it a lot, but I like the concept, and I thought that shirt was really cool. And I was thinking about it. I was like, man, they must not sell many of those, because that's hard to do. So I'm thinking to myself, like, whoever made that, what are you making, a batch of five, a batch of 10? Because, I mean, that's, I mean, 50 miles in itself is tough. And then you got to have a 400-pound deadlift. I mean, yeah, that's I saw that shirt and I was like, I've got to get something along the lines of that that, you know, kind of fits me, you know?
Yeah, we have a company that produces those. And so they make those per order.
Gotcha.
And if we had to batch those and store those somewhere, it would cost a fortune.
Oh yeah, because it's not an easy achievement by any means.
It's not an easy achievement, and they don't do it for free. So it's not a cheap shirt to have made. So we get to clear about $3 with every shirt that we sell. So
I feel you.
Not getting rich doing that. So I want to ask you a little bit about your athletic background. You're certainly in a strongman is not a field that people, you know, start doing it at age three and watch it on TV every day. How did you come into it? Give me a little bit about bit about your background athletically.
So you mentioned your friend who, like, what country was he from again?
He's from the UK.
Okay. So I don't know how many people are overseas in your audience, but in America, we've seen the Specialized really early. I was lucky that my parents, not necessarily weren't very wealthy, but I have six brothers. So we played at the YMCA. So, you know, they rotate sports. So I never played the same sport for more than two times a year. We usually play three or four. So I played soccer. Oh, goodness, I'm starting to stutter. Soccer, flag football. I swam. I played basketball. I wasn't necessarily great at any one thing. I was kind of a decent swimmer because I was a fat kid, so I floated. My family on my mom's side, they all swam and they were pretty good. So I was like the worst swimmer, but at the YMCA, you're the best swimmer when you're the worst swimmer in the family. So yeah, that kind of was my base as a kid, you know, playing a bunch of different sports. I never really could remember a time when I didn't have hand-eye coordination. I always felt like I could catch pretty well. I played goalie. I was pretty aggressive. Going to middle school, I was not the fastest. Definitely not the strongest. I was overweight. But my dad always told me, you know, hustle to the line, you know, really try to do things that kind of made you a lot of the kids that are good aren't willing to work hard. So I made sure I was the kid that was like always on time to practice, always willing to run, you know, whatever, even though I hated it. And then, you know, high school rolls around. Over the summer, I put on a bunch of weight because I realized, you know, if I want to hack in high school football, like I got to be able to bench press more. I got to be bigger. I got to be stronger. And then I go on the high school football. I was at a magnet school. So smart kids aren't usually good at football unless they're like Ivy League in college. So pretty much no one really worked that hard, in my opinion. And, you know, I would go home on the weekends and I would lift heavy and I would eat like 6 to 8 times a day. I mean, I was putting on weight during the football season, which is already hard enough, you know. Yeah. I live in Florida, so, you know, we would sweat out gallons of water, but I was really determined, you know, eating basically if I wasn't in class or eating or playing football or in the gym, like I had to be asleep. But I kind of just determined that, you know, that what I was working for was kind of more individual. So about 14, I just decided I was going to work out. I'd watch World's Strongest Man. So I kind of started doing some odd lifting, you know, I'd grab like old stones or stuff, you know, outside or whatnot, and I kind of carry them around. I basically just kind of goofed around trying to replicate what I saw on TV for probably about a year. Did my first organized strongman competition at 16 years old. And that's, you know, people say like the iron bug. I probably already caught the iron bug, you know, from doing other sports. Even before that, I did some Olympic weightlifting for a little while with a coach. He wasn't super into it, but I'd already caught it from other scenes. But when I did my first strongman competition, I kind of knew like I need to improve. I think knowing that you're not good at something is kind of like having like a hole in your armor, you know. And so like when I saw that I wasn't good at, so my first competition, there was a sled pull backwards up this hill. We flipped the tire, I think, 3 or 5 times, and I had found an old tire in my neighborhood that was in the neighborhood behind me that was being built, and I rolled it 1.5 miles home. So, you know, I was determined to get that tire because I needed a tire to flip. It wasn't very heavy, so I'd put weights inside of it. So I trained the tire at home, you know, I warm up the tire at this first show. I'm like, oh yeah, I'm killing it. I pulled the sled a couple times, like, oh, I'll be able to get this 50 feet. Well, after the tire 5 times and then going to the sled, I fell on my butt 3 or 4 times. And I remember going home and being like, I can't have that happen again. So I made a homemade sled, and pretty much once or twice a week I pulled that sled, you know, until it hurt. And so that's just kind of like, I guess the mindset I have is if I'm not good at it, I want to make sure I get better at it because I don't like being bad at something. And then I guess growing now into running, I'm sure we'll get into like how I got into running. But that kind of was the same thing as, you know, when I was a really fat, strong guy, the first comeback was like, well, can you run or can you do cardio? And I'm like, well, right now in my life, I'm not focused on that. Like I told people I'd run a marathon sometime in my life because I knew that being 330 pounds at 50 years old was not going to be healthy. So I knew at some point I'd lose weight, you know, I'd get in shape. I'd have to shift from being like max strength to maybe more conditioned. But I didn't think it was going to be now.
Did you have this kind of foresight at 16 years old? I mean, what are you now, 16, 17 years old when you're going through the intermediate strongman stuff?
So probably I probably definitely had this foresight by like 18 years old, like when I graduated high school, and I'd already been doing strongman. About 2 months after I graduated high school, I won the teenage nationals. I can't say dominant. It was going back with another guy, like we're going back and forth on points, and there, but it was a year that was packed with potential. There were two guys that had previously podiumed in teen nationals, so they were like 18 or 19, so older than me. There was a guy that had like tons of records in powerlifting, like 16, probably one of the most statically strong guys I ever competed with, just a freak. He was actually playing D1 or going to play D1 football, but he was just not interested. And then there was another guy who is also a pro now, and we actually still compete together, and he was competing. So the class of 10 or 11 guys in teen nationals has two professional strongmen, and you know, record, it was a year, like it meant a lot to me to win that. But yeah, probably by that point, I was like, you know what, I'm going to do strongman for X amount of years, and then sometime in my late age, I'm not going to be able to do strongman as intense. I'm going to want to do something else that people can't all do. So I was like, I got to run a marathon, because you know, that's kind of like for the recreational runner, that's kind of like the biggest thing you can do. Ultras aren't really a thing to like the recreational runner, at least in my opinion, from what I see. I mean, I'm a recreational runner in my opinion. You know, once you do a marathon, when you go to the YMCA or you're working out with your personal trainer, you kind of got a little badge because you did a marathon. So,
right. Well, you're doing all this, I would imagine, somewhat isolated. I mean, do you have a lot of friends that are competing in strongman and running with you, or are you just doing most of this training on your own?
A lot of it was on my own. So just so the audience, I guess, knows. So yeah, I did run and do strongman for a while. I did America's Strongest Man in 2015 in the heavyweight category. So that means you can weigh whatever. Probably weighed like 255 pounds at the time. So I was pretty much the smallest guy. I did that, and the next day I did a half marathon and PR'd my half marathon.
No shit. Wow, that's fantastic. Yeah. I didn't know that.
I don't know how to explain it. I mean, the motivation I have to lift definitely helps me in running, and it's just pushing harder, you know. I'll talk about it a little bit more, you know, as we get through some of these questions you had sent me. But the following year, I did America's Strongest Man in the lower weight class, so the 105 or less. So that's 231.6 pounds or less. So we basically weigh in at that, but then we blow it back up maybe to like 245, 250.
How long do you have to put that weight back on in between weighing and competing?
Great question. Yeah, in strongman, it's usually 24 hours. If it's a reputable competition, it's usually 24. I've seen some in Europe that they kind of have it a little less than 24. You know ahead of time when it's going to be. So for me right now, I cut from like 260 to cut to 231. So it's a big cut. But I have 24 hours. When I did weightlifting, Olympic weightlifting, I made 105 one time, but I definitely didn't start from 260 because it's a 2 hour weigh-in. Though with Olympic weightlifting, there can be delays. So in this particular meet, there was an hour delay. But it was outside in a warehouse in Florida, so you know I'm sweating out water anyway. So
what kind of weight are you cutting in 24 hours?
So usually in 24 hours I'll cut about maybe 26 to 28 pounds. I've cut for powerlifting about 30 pounds. It wasn't always. I don't recommend it. I do recommend, and this probably goes against some other advice, I do recommend people doing a small to moderate cut for experience-based purposes. If you're a coach or even just an athlete that wants to understand a little bit more about some of the processes like in the sport, doing weight cuts really teaches you, you know, more about your sodium levels, water, hydration, how to come back from it, like what to eat. Because when you do a cut, everything has to be as precise as possible, but things can get off and it can get real, and you got to adjust and you got to adapt. And those are good qualities to have as an athlete or as a coach. So I did some cuts when I was an amateur strongman to 265. That's like a subclass they have in the heavyweights for local shows. So I would cut from like 280 to 265, which is actually a very small cut when you think about percentage body weight. I did that from like 280 and then from like 285. So I was cutting like 18, 20 pounds.
I apologize for my ignorance, but when you say cut, is a cut defined as a certain period of time, or is that?
Oh, great. Yeah. So a cut for me, a cut in my opinion is usually like 24 to 48 hours. But for me, I kind of start cutting like 2 weeks out. So let's say I've been working out and I've been doing all my training sessions at 265 pounds. So 2 weeks out, I'm 265 pounds, but I got to make 231.6 or whatever. Maybe after 2 weeks, my workouts are gone down in intensity. You know, I don't have as much volume. You know, I have to deload for the competition. So I usually start cutting out some carbohydrates. I bring down the calories. And just being a big guy that holds water anyways, you know, it's better to be hydrated than not hydrated. Usually in about a week's time, I could lose about 3 pounds. And then the week before the competition, I get really restrictive so that maybe like 24 to 48 hours out, I'm down to like 258, 260. So pretty much what I'm saying by cut is, I guess 2 weeks out or less. So it's not a diet cut. It's not me losing 30 pounds over the course of 3, 5, 8, you know, however many months or whatnot.
Right. And that's not hard for you. When you say you cut out all this, all these carbs and are restrictive, that's not difficult for you?
It can be difficult. I add in more greens, you know, to be able to eat more. But this is also a period when my training, I'm not really training. I'm doing like active recovery sessions. I'm not doing anything intense. I still make sure to keep my carb levels and my intake high on days I train. So like I said, 2 weeks out is usually about the period. 2 weeks to like maybe 9 to 10 days out, because 9 to 10 days out at best is my last heavy lifting session. I can get away with being a little depleted on carbs for, you know, 65% effort, you know, a week out or something. You know, that's not a big deal. But I'm not going to deplete myself a month out where I'm still doing heavy sessions of all the strongman events, you know, all the powerlifts, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Well, clearly you can't function like this year round. What is a season of, is there seasons to strongman?
Yeah, there's different federations of strongman, and we kind of know, so this is more amateur, I guess I'm talking about. An amateur strongman, they kind of know like when the big shows are. So like they know when like their local shows usually are, like in their state. They know when all the qualifiers are, you know, all the national level. If there's international level, they kind of know. As a professional, we kind of know when World Strongest Man is. I haven't been to like the actual World Strongest Man on TV. But we kind of know when some pro shows are. But then there's also invites that could be last minute. And I unfortunately have not really caught any of those really well. I've been invited to two this year, but they kind of fell through. One of them fell through on a visa. I couldn't get the visa fast enough to go to Russia. And then another one was just, you know, there's only so many opportunities and we have a decent number of pros. So I contacted my coach first because, you know, I wanted to make sure he was on board with it. And by the time I got back to the promoter, they were like, oh, it's already taken. You know, they already got that spot. You know, somebody already took the spot, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, and I was going to ask you, I'm assuming that you have a coach. Have you always had a coach? Do you always have a coach year-round?
I have not always had a coach. I actually went pro, so I have two pro cards. I'm both a pro in the open class and the 105-kilo class. So those are the two classes that give pro cards in America. I got my open one as a heavyweight in 2014 at the Arnold Amateur. I did not have a coach then. It was shortly after that. I'd already been working on my body composition, and I knew that just like when I played middle school football going to high school football, I knew it was going to get real. So I knew I needed to have a nutritionist first. I wanted to dial in my body weight. I wanted to get as lean as possible. I wanted to put on muscle. You know, I wanted to start with a good base. So I hired a nutritionist. That kind of, I guess, escalated into getting a coach for my programming, which that particular coach happened to do hybrid type training. But right now I work with a great coach. It's not the same coach. I work with Mike Westerling. His website is built by Mike. He's programmed pretty much everything over the last almost 2 years, I think. So he's been with me for the majority of my pro shows. He's a great coach. I do recommend that somebody get a coach, if not for a short period, just to kind of have some accountability, learn some different techniques, you know, learn some different ways to program. You know, I'm a really smart athlete. I've kept all my training journals for the most part since I was really young. I refer back to them. I film pretty much every workout, all the work sets. I analyze video. So I taught myself a lot, and I know what works for me. But, you know, even though I'm really experienced, you know, he's been around the sport, and I basically give him a call at the beginning of whenever we're going to start our next, you know, how we're going to prep for the next show, and be like, here's what I think will work. And then he says, well, here's what I think will work. And then we basically combine that. And then he keeps my head right. You know, when you have a bad lift, you start thinking you need to readjust your whole program. And he's kind of that, he's the wisdom of the program, and says, you know what? I think you just had an off day. You know, eat your food, get your 8 hours. Thursday comes around or whatever day, that's when you need to hit it hard. And then sure enough, that next day is a good day. And then you're back on the program. So.
Well, you're obviously a very highly intelligent person. And I think I read somewhere that you're a freelance math tutor as well.
Yeah, I was doing some math tutoring for a little while. This sport obviously doesn't pay. So
do you go pretty far down the rabbit hole of the science behind your the anatomy in your body and keeping yourself fit?
Yeah, I got my degree. I have my bachelor's in athletic training, and I got the certification. I never used it. It sounds bad. My last internship before I graduated, I worked with a basketball team at my university, and it was cool. But because our university didn't have a football team, the basketball team was the big deal because it was a D1 school. So they were just kind of babied a lot, and I just saw the resources they had and how some of the athletes weren't taking advantage of the resources and manpower and effort put into them. And I just thought to myself, man, if I had even half these resources as a professional strongman, I would go so much further than I am now. So it was just kind of frustrating seeing people kind of like squander their resources. I don't know. I'm still in that point in my life. I'm pretty young. I'm only 25. I don't really know what my career choice needs to be or what I want to do. But yeah, I did athletic training. It was a great degree to have. I know a lot of.
If you're the strongest fucking man in the world, do you really have to know what you're going to do with the rest of your life? It seems like
a lot
of your answers will come to you.
I just got to make sure I clear. I'm the strongest under 105 kilos. So I'm a subclass.
Yeah. Okay.
Just to make sure.
Right,
but yeah, it would be great if I won enough money to support, you know, a median level of income. But yeah, so I got my athletic training degree. That was, you know, that was a great degree to get. I had some good professors. We had We had a cadaver lab. So I actually got to cut open, you know, the body and see all the muscles. So that definitely helps me in understanding some exercises, you know, knowing where insertions are, and things like that, not to get into it, not that I remember all of it. Having that background, kind of remembering the lectures, you know, anytime any lecture I could relate back to lifting, which I did, I usually ask questions, be like, hey, when I do this lift, is that muscle activated? And the professor was like, yeah, that one is, or no, it isn't. That really helps me even considering, like say mobility before my session, or like picking exercises that carry over, things like that. I kind of wish I had further that degree. It's still something I might do. But yeah, that knowing your body and having some anatomy textbook that you've looked over will help you as an athlete, you know, knowing all your muscles, knowing the insertions. And then when you go into these, other professionals, like I go to a chiropractor, you know, I get active release done. I get massage. I'm asking questions. And since I have a base level degree, I can kind of, weed out the bullshit, so to speak, because a lot of these people, they only have a hammer, so everything's a nail.
Yeah.
So when somebody tells me, oh, you need to foam roll your IT band a lot, well, there's no science behind that actually really doing anything other than making it feel good temporarily. So I just weed that out and be like, okay, whatever. I don't say that to them, but I can weed that out. And that comes from having just a bachelor's and a certification. So I think everybody should have a little bit of knowledge, kind of seek out reliable sources, you know, so that when they go into these places, they're not caught up in thinking they need to get a chiropractic adjustment 3 times a week or need to have like 18 massages a month or whatever they try to tell you.
I can imagine that the bro science gets thrown at you all the time, and that it would help to have some sense behind what you're saying.
Well, I have a great chiropractor. One thing I guess I'll tell the audience, this is a good tip. So I go to a chiropractor that does more than just adjustments. He does Graston technique, active release technique. He knows how to KT tape. He knows a bunch of different things. So there'll be times I go in and he doesn't give me any adjustment. or he doesn't do any active release. And while some people are like, oh man, that's stupid, I want to get all of it, I paid for it, right? That tells me that he knows what he's doing. Uh-huh. That tells me he knows what tool to pick, and that's the type of professional. And not to mention, he's still in shape. He's in great shape. So knowing that he does CrossFit workouts, he's in great shape. His family's in great shape. I've met his wife. His wife has their kids eating on a very good diet. You know, they try not to have any preservatives. Like, knowing that that's a lifestyle thing, I know he's not going to give me some BS about, you know, whatever. You know, what he's telling me is to make me better, and not just try to pump his brand, so to speak. So,
you mentioned CrossFit. How do you feel about CrossFit?
Well, one of my good friends that came to a competition to help me out, he's a elite level CrossFitter, and he's been to the games twice with his team. I think CrossFit athletes, just like runners, help me as a strongman define what work is. I helped my friend enter his first powerlifting competition and do his first weight cut. And, you know, he told me that that was the hardest thing he'd done, is doing a weight cut. Well, I go to his CrossFit gym and I see his easy day, and I'm like, holy crap, that's a lot of volume. I see the mobility work, like, holy crap, that's a lot of mobility work. He kind of gave me crap about not eating enough micronutrients, not getting enough, you know, all the vegetables and stuff. And I was like, man, maybe you're right. So over the past couple months, I've added in extra greens. I've been focusing on vegetables. It's still not at the best. I need to buy organic or whatever. I need to, you know, I need to buy, not organic, a better variety of vegetables. But, you know, learning from people in other fields can only make you better. And yeah, their work capacity is insane. You know, I mean, they pretty much spend every day working out. And if they tone it down, it's active recovery, exercises, they focus on mobility. I wouldn't say it's necessarily the greatest base for strongman, but when you look at CrossFit athletes and the fact that they're mobile enough to apply their strength through all ranges of motion, I think that's a big benefit for strongman, because these big athletes and strongman, are really great at, say, moving events where we carry weight. But if we do a static lift, like power lifts, you know, squat or deadlift, if you don't have the mobility to get in position, you can't apply that force. Same thing with overhead press. You can't apply the force if you can't get the bar on your shoulders as opposed to, like, up by your chin. Even from running, I've noticed that when I was running more often, I would develop a better gait pattern. It allowed me to better absorb impact. My feet became stronger. My shins became more conditioned. My calves were more conditioned. So doing heavy moving events, say like a yoke walk, that's 900 pounds on my back, I no longer have some of the stressors on my feet because my feet are stronger and I have biomechanically learned to land my feet a little better. And I actually stole from running. I wear compression socks pretty much every workout now, kind of because I just like them. But I think they're a great benefit. I mean, having your calves compressed, you know, keeping that Achilles warm, keeping your arches strong. I wear all flat shoes in my daily life. I love the zero drop shoes. That's all stolen from running. And that's something that a strongman can take from it. I'm not going to get down to 130 pounds or 140 pounds, you know, like a runner, but I can definitely learn from somebody who's an elite level runner.
Well, your openness is refreshing. Your openness to CrossFit and to running, and, you know, as it pertains to strongman, and I know that Cale Beck, who's got a wonderful sense of humor, and I like reading his comments and his posts on his Starting Strongman Facebook group, and he's in a constant battle to keep strongman about strongman, because everybody wants to go to bashing CrossFit instead of celebrating strongman. And it's the same way that I feel about CrossFit and runners, or runners and gym rats, that, you know, why can't we all just do our thing? You know, that they all benefit, as long as we're not on the couch living a life of depression and alcoholism. You know, isn't it great that we're up doing something? And, you know, people have to pick a side. And, you know, I don't think they have to be that.
I mean, I guess it's a bunch of different issues we have at play. I think one of the big issues for strongman is kind of envy. You know, you got running and CrossFit, and I was watching World's Strongest Man on TV, bull riding. Man, they make $1 million in 1 year. you know, the best bull rider. So strongman doesn't have that type of money. CrossFit does, you know, the sponsors and everything. So I think there's some envy in strongman. And I'll be honest, I envy it. I see myself as a professional athlete. I conduct myself as one. And when I compete, I would like to think I provide an entertainment quality and personality to be paid accordingly. Now, I'm not expecting
that's a valid,
you know,
valid point.
Yeah, I'm not expecting $1 million. You know, I know it's a hobby to most people, but, you know, I would like to have a little bit of compensation, especially when I win. And I do get a little bit of prize money, but I'm not going to mention how much, but it's very, very low. Sometimes I win a show, and depending on where it is, that's just breaking even. And I'll get, you know, I've gotten a sponsor here, and I get some free equipment here, and, you know, maybe somebody throws me protein powder or something. But yeah, I mean, I pay for everything. I mean, I still pay for my coach, you know, I pay for my airfare. Most of the time I've had a sponsor here or there pay for it. You know, there's still entry fees occasionally. But I think what you're trying to talk about is, you know, we need to celebrate everybody doing something. And I definitely think that's a good thing. I've been in the endurance world for a little bit over the past 2 years, and I did a bunch of random stuff. And obviously I show up and I'm big dude and I wear pink and I have a beard and I look funny and stuff. And one of the things that really annoyed me was just people that were very elitist. And what I mean by that is one example is I go to an indoor row competition, which apparently is called like an erg. You know, the indoor rowers are called ergs, like, you know, whatever. But that's such a small little terminology thing I was incorrect about. Well, I show up and I had one of the best or like the best 500 meter time. And while that's not really tested in that sport, because it's all about the 2,000 meters or about the 2K, you know, it was just frustrating to see people be so elitist about their sport. And I'm thinking, you don't even know that I'm a professional strongman. You don't even know that I have this. And I don't say that to them. I'm not going to be a dick. But, you know, I look at people and like when they do the sport, like I'll probably in my head be thinking some of these things, but I try really hard not to, you know, not to diss them, because I've seen people at strongman competitions that are probably weaker than the average American, but you know what? They're killing it. And as long as they realize where they're at, you know, as long as they're respectful to me and the other athletes that might be a little stronger than them, I'm more than willing to help them. It's when people get entitled or elitist, it makes it really difficult to want to help them or really difficult to want to understand their sport. Running was always great, though. I found a lot of friends in running. I still keep up with they even send me messages for my strongman competitions. You know, they don't even know anything about it. They say, you know, go kick butt. I'm like, okay.
That's cool.
Yeah, I mean, I had a friend of mine. I ran a marathon with him last year. That same marathon fell on the date I was doing the World's Strongest Man competition this, I guess, last month now. And so he was going for a 4.5-hour marathon, and I'm going for the world title, and we're both like, we better make it happen.
Oh, that's nice.
They're completely different sports. So I definitely got a lot of joy out of having different communities. You know, in strongman, sometimes it gets at the elite levels. I hate to say it, it gets kind of alpha. Everybody's kind of uptight. You know, there's certain personalities that, you know, they just don't like each other, don't like me, or I don't like them. And it happens. You know, we're competitive and eventually our personalities don't mesh. So I would just go to running. Because guess what? I'm not that great of a runner. No one was worried I was gonna win. So, you know, everybody was nice to me. And that's a cool feeling, being able to switch sports and being able to find another community to get that positive vibe. And that kind of motivates you going back to the gym.
Man, you know, you run a
PR 5K. Now you feel good about your 5K time. You go to the gym and then you hit a PR on squat or deadlift a couple days later, you know, whatever. So
I think it's cool that your awareness allows you to be so open-minded to do that. You know, I don't think a lot of people get that far out of themselves to look inward and say, maybe I need to go hit the trails or do a race or go run for a little while and come back and see what's happening.
I mean, I'll have to be honest. I haven't done much running in about the past 6 months. Right now I'm doing indoor bike training and some really short distances on the rower just because it aggravates my forearm and my bicep tendon and my left arm. But yeah, cardio is, I mean, even by yourself, I get on my bike trainer and it's in front of the TV and I'll watch a documentary on Netflix, or I'll update my Instagram because I'm always behind on updating my Instagram and I'm trying to market myself better, you know, but just riding that bike and getting off and I do some foam rolling and I stretch and, you know, I feel better. So cardio is by all means, you know, there's so many days I'm like, man, I don't really want to ride the bike for 30 minutes. It's pointless. It's not going to make me that much stronger. It probably isn't. It probably won't be a game changer one time or two times or three times. But now that I've made it a habit, I would say it's a game changer. I feel like my legs come back. I feel better. I'm a little bit more positive. I feel like I accomplished something that day. So yeah, I like cardio.
Well, let me back up a little bit to the running and how you got into the, how you got into the running and where that's taken you.
Sure. So the running happened when I was working with this hybrid group before I worked with my current coach. Pretty much they were about doing some low-intensity cardio, kind of building up that work capacity, which is good. I don't want to say necessarily that was a bad thing, but because I'm so goal-driven and I like a challenge, being in a hybrid group where there was other big guys or other guys kind of built like me that had better run times, I unfortunately or fortunately shifted my goals to also wanting to beat them in running. So running became a little bit more in the program than it probably needed to be for strongman. So I don't want to say it held me back in strongman, but it probably did take some recovery time away from it and took some focus away from it. But I was losing weight at the time, so it was kind of good to do them all at the same time. Did that for about, I guess I was running in races and stuff for about a year and a half, 2 years. Pretty much accomplished every distance I wanted to, not necessarily the times I wanted to. I still have some goals out there I want to do. I entered a 100-mile ultra last year, my first ultra, but flat terrain, a really good course, I heard. And a couple weeks out or a month out, I did something in my right foot. And I was like, man. So the longest training run I had was only 16 miles. By that point, I'd run only one marathon. And I had the option to either defer to the next year, which would have been this year, which I would not have been able to do, or run the 50. And in my mind, going from the 100 to the 50 was kind of like, I didn't want to do that. So I ended up making it 62 miles before I came to the checkpoint, and they had already packed up early. I got there like right at the right time.
Oh, shit.
And they had packed up. So my friends and I call and text this guy. It's like 11:30 at night. And he got back to us because I'm sure he was doing something along the race course. But it was like 45 minutes later. And by this point, I've already taken off my right shoe and sat down in the car and gotten stiff. So I basically just called it. Do I think I could have finished it? Probably not with how I was feeling just to get to 62. And I'm sure you know with all the running, you know, the cutoff times get more strict as you go, not the other way around.
Right.
So I kind of was already – if I'm already at a strict cutoff at 62 miles, it would only gotten worse. A lot of that was just poor management. I had a crew of lifters. None of us had ever run. I had two friends of lifters. I didn't have proper apparel. You know, I don't even have a proper camel pack. It was like a military one. It was heavy. So, but it's, I guess I'm getting off topic a little bit, but
no, you not know, at all, man. Keep going.
I kind of told you when we were talking earlier, you know, one of the things is mindset. And I think we make these goals, and even though I didn't accomplish 100, I can't talk about that, but even 50 miles, I'm sure a lot of people in your group have a goal of 50 miles. We make these things like the ceiling. And I'm going to cuss. It's not the fucking ceiling. You know, I started crying during the middle of this race because I felt bad that I was letting my parents down and my brothers down. Because how I see these types of things is it's life or death. Like, you know, we tell people we're going to do something and we've gotten a habit of not following through with our word. You know, we just had New Year's and we have all these resolutions. We don't follow through. And for me, it's a mindset thing. It's like, I got to follow through. So I get really emotional when I do fail or when I don't live up to my expectation, which are very high. But I think the ceiling is so much higher than what we say it is, you know, because every time I think of something that's going to be really difficult and I accomplish it, by the time I've accomplished it, I've already envisioned it happening so many times that it's not even cool. And then I want to do more. And I think the difference with other people is they make 50 miles or 100 miles or whatever their goal is to be something that's almost untouchable, like it's on a pedestal. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you right now, if any of us were in if anybody in your group, I guarantee could finish 100 miles today if there was a life or death situation.
Right.
Because they have to. Every muscle fiber would be torn, but you would do it. And the same thing with lifting. Like, how does that mom lift that car off that kid? Because you're motivated, because you have to. So if we can flip that switch, even though it's very dangerous because that's when you get injured, but if you can flip that switch enough to accomplish your goals, you can push that ceiling so much higher, and that's going to give you so much more confidence. And not to sound cocky, but I know that I can flip the switch. In my training on day-to-day, I don't get super amped up, or try not to. So I'm at a lower level, but when I walk out into a competition, I know I can flip that switch, and I know I can make things happen that I did not even do in training. So yeah, having that mindset, being able to flip the switch, knowing that you can push past that ceiling, will make you better at anything. And I know every runner in this group has hit the wall or had that point where something cramped up, or you know, something bad happened in the race. You know, it started to rain or wind, or you know, your water spills and you don't have any water for X number of miles. I've been there. But I think we all learn from those moments more than we learn from that excellent race where everything worked great.
Man, that's fucking great. That is great. You know, you said, I wanted to ask you about that earlier. As far as the intensity goes, you said that you're pretty laid back and you don't flip that switch in your everyday training. Is that something that you strategically reserve for competitions?
I try to. I do get intense for some work sets sometimes. I'll get amped up, like as far as lifting goes. For my cardio right now, it's really low intensity because I gotta save it for all the lifting. That's my priority now. But yeah, it's just again with the whole like Instagram and all the social media, there are a lot of guys that want to lift to be able to show it off on the internet, and that's cool. And I post, you know, you saw some of my posts, I'm sure, but it all matters about the competition. So there are days I have to say, hey, you know what, I could go up 30 pounds, but I want those 30 pounds on competition day when it matters. I'm still maturing as an athlete. That's something that's not easy for me to do, to leave it in the tank. But there, I think it was Benedict Magnuson said that, he never wanted to fail in training because he never wanted to know how strong he was. So if you never fail in training, you never know where your ceiling is.
That's interesting.
So if you never know where your ceiling is, then you accidentally pull 1,000 pounds like he did, you know, because he had only pulled say 900 or 950 in his training, but it was so fast that, you know, he goes to competition. He's like, what the heck? Slap another 25 on each side. But if he had failed 1,000 in training, now he knows that when he gets to around 1,000 pounds, it's going to be hard.
Yeah, right, right.
So yeah, it's keeping your body and your mind kind of on the same page. It's keeping your body firing at maximum speed, maximum output, and then your mind never knowing failure. And when it never knows failure, adding 5 pounds, adding another mile, you know, trying to cut your mile time down by 5, 10 seconds a mile, whatever, becomes easier. But when you fail at a goal because it's too lofty or, you know, it's not planned well, then it just – it wrecks you. Like I had a workout yesterday. I failed at hitting some numbers, and it's mentally affecting me. And maybe if I had gone a little less and hit it, I would feel a little better right now. So, yeah, it's one of those things that constantly learning from.
There's a lot to be said for that from a discipline standpoint. It would be hard to lift the kind of weight that – it's hard to lift just the kind of weight that I lift and not feel like, hey, I want to – show off that I'm big shit sometimes. I can only imagine that in your position, it would be a struggle every day to not want to just blow it out of the water.
It's not as hard as you think because, see, strongman is so multifaceted. I'm really not that great in the gym. My power lifts aren't that great. I'm not that great statically. I'm more athletic with the weights and be able to move implements and, you know, all the technique. Uh-huh. So for me to demonstrate my skill set, I guess, more happens in competition anyways, but I know guys, or I've noticed guys that will post videos, and I kind of just know based on their personality and how they compete that will be their best lift in training, and they will not hit that in competition. Whereas I know myself, I know in competition I'm going to hit at least what I hit in training, if not 5 or 10% more, because of how I train and because of maybe the motivation of the competition. You know, I train alone in my garage. So the only arousal I have is from music in my own head, in my mind. Mm-hmm. But when I go to competition, I have an MC who's yelling at me, who wants me to succeed. I have the crowd, and like I have my girlfriend there, I have my dad there, and even other competitors that want me to do well because they know I'm a good competitor. You know, that amplifies it. And it's the same thing with running a road race. You know, my best times, for the most part, I think they all came in And the road race I did, I think my mile one time, I PR'd by like 20 seconds on a road mile because it was a 2-lap course, and it wasn't even that great of a course. It was around this neighborhood. But you have people yelling at you for at least half the race, and you have timers, and you have an announcer, you know, he's like, hey, he's coming around the bit, you know, it's like, oh my gosh. And then you have people trying to edge you out to get your spot, and you're like super motivated. So yeah, you know, save that for the competition, because you're gonna have all this arousal and all this motivation. Like, hit the PR then.
What kind of distances have you ran?
So I've done 1-mile races, I've done this one interesting one where it was like a 2K row to a 3K run. Then 5K, I've done 10K, I've done 15K, then half marathon, full marathon. I attempted that 100 where I did the 62. I've done sprint triathlon and 2 Olympic triathlon. I've done a 1.25-mile open water swim.
That's a hell of a resume.
Yeah. I've done rowing events at like the 500, 1,000, 2,000, and the 20 minutes for meters. So yeah, I kind of played around for a while. Pretty much every weekend I was doing an event, I'd find one within a couple hours, and I'd basically work out 3 times during the week and do like 1 or 2 things of cardio during the week, and then I would do a hard endurance event on the weekend. So,
well, my partner Vaughn Rawls, who actually started this Lift Heavy Run Long, he started it because he was at an endurance race. He was at a 50-mile race or a 50K race,
and okay,
he was looking around at the runners, and Vaughn's a bigger guy, a beefier guy, and he was just felt out of place, and the thought occurred to him, I wonder how many of these guys could deadlift 400 pounds. Not that any of them cared to deadlift 400 pounds, but just, you know, that was, I guess, his way of making himself feel better, kind of separating himself from the crowd, and that's how Lift Heavy Run Long came to be.
So his thing is a 50-mile 400, essentially, is what you're saying.
Correct.
Okay. Yeah, I think a couple times I maxed my deadlift like a couple days before doing a half. So one time I pulled 700 with straps because we're allowed in strongman, and then ran a half marathon under 2 hours.
No shit. Wow, yeah. That's impressive.
Well, you know, see, people, obviously this group already understands, so I'm just going to preach to the choir, but having muscular strength is a benefit in running because your joints are more supported, and you have that kick. I can't tell you, we have this run where I am, and it's the biggest 15K, I think, in the world. It's called the Gate River Run. You might have heard of it. But they had, like, Olympians come out. Like, it's a big deal for the city. And we run over, like, 3 of our bridges over this nice river, blah, blah, blah. Well, one of the bridges is called the Green Monster because it's green, and it's, like, 1.5 miles long. And I don't remember what the elevation is or whatever, but people call it the Green Monster. I thought to myself, like, this is not that bad because – I have hamstrings from deadlifting and squatting and sprinting, and a lot of these runners don't do enough strength work because they're afraid it's going to affect their running, and it will at the elite level. It will, but for recreational runners, when I get to a hill, I just think keep pushing. You know, like I just keep pulling it. You know, I'm just driving up, and then being a heavier runner, when I get to the top of the hill, I just think fall down with style. So I'm letting that body weight just push me down, and all I'm trying to do is make sure I don't fall on my face. So the cool thing they did in this run is the last mile is like from the top of that bridge to the finish line. So they call it like the speed mile or some fancy name. So here you have like the average mile time for this race for me was like almost 9 minutes, a little under 9 minutes or something. But then the last mile is like 6:30 or 6:50 because it's going down a bridge for like a half mile. And then you finish the last half mile with like 5,000 people just yelling. You know,
man,
so of course you're
moving.
Part of it.
That is moving. Breaking a 7-minute mile for a guy of any size is pretty impressive.
My best mile time is 5:31, and that was on the road mile course, and I weighed about 255. And I'm mad that I didn't break 5:30, like 1.2 seconds over.
Holy mackerel.
Yeah. And I was never a good runner. And that's what I'm trying – and that's one of the things, again, with the whole thing about like – you know, trying to push the ceiling. Growing up playing football, they made us run a mile to warm up all the time, which is dumb. But I sucked at running. I really can't remember a time in my childhood or ever that I felt like running was good. Even when I was trying to get into fitness more, I remember reading some ebooks about on your off days, do some running. I said, okay. So I took our dog and I was like, I'm going to run outside the neighborhood. So our neighborhood's 1 mile to the, if you run to the front of the neighborhood is 1/2 mile. So the run there and back is 1 mile. So I went past the neighborhood and then I couldn't get it all the way back. So probably the longest I ever ran before I started with the hybrid group and actually reconditioning and going to run was probably 1.5 miles. The longest I ever ran. So by no means was I like, you know, already conditioned or already had the muscle, or, you know, already had the muscle fiber type. And that's kind of the cop out anyways. You know, you say, you know, there's some big guys in the group and I've been a big guy my whole life, but those big guys, I don't want them to limit themselves and be like, I can never run. I'm like, heck yeah, you can run.
Right.
Who says you can't?
Right.
And there's people that can't gain weight really, you know, that, you know, can't gain weight or, you know, aren't really strong right at the bat. Well, guess what? I was missing a 400-pound deadlift once, weighing 300 pounds. You're going to be fine. You're going to get it.
That is awesome.
So both ways, like, you don't have to be good today, and don't be like, oh, well, I had the wrong muscle fiber type, or I'm big boned, or I'm, you know, or my genetics, or my mom, or my dad. Like, who cares?
Isn't that a bullshit way to go about it?
Oh, I don't want to be mean, but, like, I don't have perfect genetics. Like, I see it in my brothers. You know, we're not all genetically gifted at the same thing or even anything, but it comes down to working and going in every day. And yeah, there'll be some kid that will come into the gym and in 1 year could catch up to me. But guess what? He's not going to want to do it any longer because it was too easy. Mm-hmm. So people that are not genetically gifted, like some people in your group that have these goals of doing 50 miles, when they hit 50 miles, they're going to love it. And they're going to keep doing it because they knew how long it took to go from being on that couch, like you were talking about earlier, to go into 50 miles, and I bet in a year they do 100 because they want to. Whereas the kid that never had a problem running, that his mom made him enter a half marathon with her or whatever, and he beat her anyways, that kid's not going to want to do it. He's going to want to go home and play video games because it was too easy for him, and he doesn't have the motivation to get better.
We laugh all the time, my wife and I and the people that we run with, that – you know, if you really want to make a fool of yourself, look around before some of these races and try to predict who you're going to beat or who you're not going to beat.
Yeah.
Because you don't have any, you can't tell what anybody.
Oh, no.
Judging by looks at somebody, you know, you just get your ass smoked by these people that look, you know, big and wobbly and wonky. And then sometimes you go blowing by somebody who looks athletically superior. You just never tell.
How far do you and your wife like to go? Like, what's the distance you guys like the most?
I don't know. We don't do a lot of training running. She does a lot of marathons. We just finished the Tunnel Hill 50 miler that we've done a couple years. Neither one of us have been over 50. But longer runs, you know, I'm a really slow runner that really enjoys making a day out of it. You know,
gotcha.
I like being on the trail for long periods of time.
I'll take that back. I didn't really even try. I never got with a running group, and I think that long distance would be really fun for me, you know, having a full day. With Strongman, though, we already have kind of a full day for all our events, so it's kind of hard to do like a full day of event work and then the next day do your long distance run because that's when it would have to be on the weekend. But I love the half marathon. I don't know what it is about the half marathon, but you build up steam for the first 6 to 8 miles, and then before you know it, you're under 5 miles, and it's just like, go get it. And for me, being a runner that did negative splits, I got faster as I went. It was like playing a video game. I get to pick off people as I go. So I think pretty much every half marathon I did, no one would pass me in the last 4 miles because I'm having a negative split. And most runners, you know, they fade or they stay roughly the same speed. So yeah, that was really fun for me is half marathons. And then marathons and longer distance was hard for me. But like I talked with getting amped up and everything, I probably run too amped up because I'm so like I'm a lifter by heart, I guess.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So that half marathon was just long enough to where I could kind of like find my stride, but then still at the end kind of get amped up. You know, you have my music in or whatever. I'm like, I'm going to get it. But then doing like a marathon, like you got to stay motivated for 4 or 5 hours. And then in your case, you're doing a 50 miler, you know, that's 12 plus hours, right?
Yeah.
On a trail. So yeah, like you got to, that motivation, like you got to use it wisely.
Yeah. I try to stay on the trail. That road just beats up on my hips too much. I'm a lot more comfortable on the soft, cushy trail.
I just can't run. I don't run on concrete anymore. I like running asphalt, and we have decently paved roads where I'm at. But yeah, just a little gradient of the asphalt affects my hips, so I have to make sure I rotate around. But the trail, I guess I probably don't like, because I've run a couple in trail and on cross country, and it's just the speed. I can't predict how fast I'll be able to go as well. Mm-hmm. So it probably is more of a mental thing. You're being like, oh, yeah, I'm not going fast, you know. Right. So.
Well, Andrew, I told you I would let you off the hook at noon, and I got to get my kids roller skating or else they'll be upset with me.
Oh, no problem.
But, man, I can't tell you how much I appreciate you taking the time to be on this call. This was informative, and it was definitely inspiring, man. I love hearing the things that you're talking about.
Oh, no problem. And let me give a shout-out to I just want to make sure I mention my coach again if anyone's interested in the group, because he does hybrid-type stuff. And hopefully I'm not infringing upon anybody else in the group. I work with Mike Westerling. His website is Built by Mike. If you have any questions about anything on the podcast or, you know, any other examples of how I train, my Instagram is Running Strongman. I can be reached on Facebook, Andrew Clayton. If you're interested in Strongman, by all means, you know, go ahead and shoot me a message. There's a lot of resources out there. There's multiple federations. I'll be happy to turn you towards doing that. If you are from a running background, don't be afraid to go Strongman. And if you're from, you know, being in the gym and just lifting, don't be afraid to, you know, enter that 5K.
That's awesome. I want to get with you and get, you know, all the places where we can find you on social media and your website and your coach's information, and we'll get that posted and get that out.
Perfect. Sounds good.
I appreciate you, Andrew. Stay in touch with me, and maybe if you're ever up in the Byhalia area or if we're further down south, we could get together and do a podcast face-to-face.
That's perfect. I would enjoy that.
Thanks, buddy. Best of luck.
All right. Bye.